Imagine traveling back to a time before the internet, before Mountain Dew Livewire, and before the Neo post-apocalypse. This summer, Apocalypse Video asked the question, where were you in 1982?
I mean, what happened? How did everything that was so good get so bad?
A time when men were men.
I got nowhere up to go! I got nowhere up to go!
Women were women.
You gotta be fucking kidding.
And mice could talk.
My son Timothy is so sick.
Join us all summer long as we celebrate the box office hits and misses of 1982. The date is June 25th, 1982. Asia is feeling the heat of the moment as their self-titled debut sits atop the album charts. And a film from John Carpenter is about to get under your skin, because man is the warmest place to hide. The film is The Thing, and it's about to reveal itself now.
Mayday. Mayday. This is U.S. Station 31. You read me? Found something in the ice. We need some help down here. Can anybody hear me? We found something. We found something. We found something.
Men have just discovered something. For 100,000 years, it was buried in the snow and ice. Now it has found a place to live. Inside. Where no one can see it. Or hear it. Or feel it.
I know I'm human. Some of you are still human. This thing doesn't want to show itself. It wants to hide inside an imitation. It'll fight if it has to. But it's vulnerable out in the open. If it takes us over, then it has no more enemies. Nobody left to kill it. And then it's won.
You guys gonna listen to Gary? He can beat one of those things!
Cody out back locked up in the shed and Mike and Jackie out investigating that alien crash site. I don't know. I think we're all too tired to do anything about it, Ryan. Why don't you say we just sit here and pod for a while? See what happens.
No. All right. Me a sip of that old, what are they drinking? Smirnoff all this whole movie?
Hey, that's too much. Give me that back, you cheating bitch.
Nah, you feel that way, David. You're the only one that could have got to that blood.
Yeah, this is just a twofer this time. Me and Ryan are just sitting outside in the cold in the middle of June. as the fire dies down and the radioactive snow just falls on us. We're just staring at each other right now.
Yep. It's all we got. We just stare at each other until we're dead.
1982 is the thing. So we're coming off of Poltergeist. And I gotta say, this movie so like when we mentioned when we were talking about Poltergeist, we were all impressed at how quickly that movie gets going, like literally from frame one. Here is creepiness, and then you know it gives you like the thing that the movie is most known for, like right from the start.
You said it. You said it.
Good screaming, everybody.
The secret word is the day. Yeah. This movie, I feel like, sets the creepy tone and atmosphere right from the get-go. Like, the music for this movie is great. And then you just see, again, we see the opening of the Predator in this movie. We see, yeah. It's like the exact same sequence.
It's funny to start this way, but I think my only critique of this movie is that flying saucer.
It looks a little goofy to you?
I think just it being a flying saucer at all.
Oh.
For some
reason. The movements of it as it kind of, it like wobbles, you know?
It's like crashing or something. I don't know. Like, it feels bad to start there because it is the first thing. But it's the only thing I never really liked about this movie, I think.
Really?
Just because it's just like, it's a fucking, that thing flies a flying saucer. Like, the thing is in that thing. Is to me like...
Well, I think the suggestion is the thing... It's like Alien. I think the suggestion is the thing took over whatever was flying that flying saucer.
Okay. Okay. Maybe just it being a saucer. I don't know. Maybe.
I'll grant you it. I mean, out of all the effects in the movie, it's probably the one that holds up
the least.
I'm not
even mad about the effect. It's more of just like the design.
It's a little goofy as it wobbles towards the screen. It's
just the most old school feeling of the whole movie that feels so... Mm. Modern.
Well, hey, man, this is like 100,000-year-old UFO. UFOs back then looked dorky. What do you
want? I know. I guess it is. It's just dorky. That's all it is. It's a dorky flying saucer. But I don't even know. It's a stupid thing to complain about because it is an alien thing, and that's what we see is people have flying saucers and stuff. And there could be even today with the flying saucers, people see that there may be a thing among us. You know, we don't know.
Well, there's certainly a thing among us.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think the music is great. I love that you get those John Carpenter titles, you know, his titles, the font. I forget what it's called, but we just call it the John Carpenter font at this point. It comes up, you get that great Ennio Morricone score.
Doing a Carpenter score, him doing Carpenter, basically.
Basically, yeah. And as the flying saucer goes down, you get one of the best title cards ever.
It's the best.
It's this in Star Wars for me. It's like,
it's crazy.
It's so effective. And what's cool about it is they didn't change the method they did this opening title card from how they did it originally. It was like something with like a garbage bag and they like lit it on fire or something and it burned in like an outline or something. Like a very simple effect, but it still works.
Oh, the best. Yeah, I love
and then we cut to the desolate, the desolate frozen landscape of Antarctica, 1982, and like again the music and the visuals in this movie. Like watching this, I was like, damn, this movie sets tone so freaking well. It's all gelling together so well, and then you get that weird like. I'm trying to imagine this movie. So both of us have obviously seen this movie before.
Yeah,
I'm trying to.
I'm always surprised at like what I. Things
forget
about it though, you know. Yeah. And I think it's a movie I'd watch on TV a lot and stuff, and maybe why I'd miss the UFO, and then whenever I watch it like at home I'm like, oh yeah, there's this UFO shot in the beginning. I for some reason I feel like the UFO would be fine in the ice, like you see it later. It's the flying part, maybe that's what it is.
Okay.
Something about it, I'm gonna keep bringing it up, but that's the only thing I don't know what else we're going to talk about this movie. Is we're going to Chris Farley show it if I didn't have one thing, you know?
Well, I know. I agree. It's more effective crash and you just see the outline of it, the suggestion of it, that how huge it is later. And you got all, you know, they're watching the videos of it. And that's one thing, like with movies like this, like one creepy, effective thing that's easy to do. People watching grainy black and white VHS footage, you know? Mm-hmm.
He's like,
to establish backstory.
9 hours of this, you know.
Yeah, like how much more of this crap is there? 9 hours. I don't know. But that should have been the opening quote for the episode.
Yeah. Video recording device.
Yeah, they had a video recording unit. I love that line.
Yeah, yeah. I've seen it. I'm trying to. I don't know. I can't tell you when I first saw it because it's a movie that just was on. Mm-hmm. You know, always was around. I don't know if you remember. I mean,
that's the thing. I was trying to remember like my feelings watching this the first time. Like,
I feel
like
you'd
like
be on like AMC at like midnight a lot.
Yeah. I feel like this was on TV quite a bit back in the day, and I can't remember the first time I watched
this,
but I wish I could.
Yeah, I wish I could too. I mean, the thing is I think the things I was always just, I feel like I'd always catch it with like the, what's like the damn, get your heart starting
the defibrillator
again.
Defibrillator
thing. Like that was what I'd always would be in my head stuff. And I'm like, and then I think seeing it, putting it on TV, it'd be like, had that happened yet or not? Like, I didn't know, you know? And I remember that always, like, sticking with me. And then the thing is that there's so many other images that I don't remember in that, like, come every time I see it, I'm like, Jesus, that gets crazier than I remember it, you know? It's like the dogs and that are stuck in my head forever.
Oh, God, the dogs.
But then, like, after that, like, there's other things that even go crazier that I always forget about. I don't know.
Yeah, that was one thing I was watching this, like, I mean, I don't know, I don't remember how I felt watching this the first time, but I know how people felt at the time watching this in 1982. They did not like it.
I mean, it's upsetting as hell. I think you would be. I think anybody, a major motion picture.
I think that's probably an understatement. I would call this the barf bag movie of July. I have some problems with it. One of them is, I think, the characters. They're not made into three-dimensional people. Their function is to walk down the corridor and be jumped on. The other thing is plausibility. Once they figure out that this thing can turn into one of them, they ought to institute a watertight buddy system, but instead they have all kinds of loopholes. People walk out into the snow, come back with a grin on their face, so that the story is totally implausible, and the movie just basically is an excuse for this very gruesome and repellent creature to gross us out. It is the most nauseating thing I've ever seen on a movie screen, I think.
That's quite a statement. I think
I'll stand behind it.
Yeah, I think.
Well, it was funny. Like, for the longest time, I was like, oh, fuck the people of 1982. They didn't know how good they had it. Oh, it was just E.T. There could only be room for one alien, and it's a nice, smiley alien. But, like, I'm like, I had to dial that back a minute watching it, because I'm like, that scene when the scene you're referring to, when they're trying to defibrillate the guy and the defibrillator paddles go through him, and suddenly the stomach turns into teeth and it eats the guy's arms off, and then his head like stretches off of his body, and then a tentacle like shoots out of his mouth and it pulls itself, and then spider legs come out of it. I'm watching this thinking like, okay,
you
nice
puke.
People of 1982, like, yeah. I get that this is disgusting.
It's so off-putting.
I just it's me and my kids just saw E.T. last week, and we're like, Mom, let's go see the new Alien movie.
Clear.
Clear.
This maybe shouldn't have come out in the summer. I'm looking at that June 25th, 82 is...
This should have been like a winter release.
Like, that is disgusting that it came out that day. I'm just saying, it's... Yeah, I think this thing is they screwed up. I think
just bad
timing. I don't blame
the
people. I don't blame people, because I think, in a way, like, I'm trying to think of a movie I've seen where I'm like, oh, God, like, I can't even, like, watch that. And, like, that I've seen for the first time. Any come to mind for you where you're just like, Jesus?
Oh, I remember the first time I saw Hostel towards the end of the movie, when that girl like gets like her eyeball burned out, and the like socket is like dangling from her eye.
Yeah, yeah,
that was rough.
I just like things like that where you're just like, oh, like just so off putting that you like hate it. You know, you can't even come back around to like enjoy the movie anymore. You know.
And it's like, I guess I could get that, especially, I think it's really just, it was the contrast, because again, this is a matter of weeks after E.T. came out. People are flying high, you know, like as we said about Poltergeist, this came out around the same time as Poltergeist, like within a week or two. And while that movie does have disgusting things, it has
releases,
a guy peeling his face
though,
off,
you know?
There are moments of release, and overall the tone of it ultimately is just like, oh, we are a family and we got out of there and there's love and that. In this,
there's comfort.
It's very
there's comfort
nihilistic.
Your bed, even if there's a clown under it, there's at least the comfort of, you know, home at some
yes.
point in that movie.
This is in a cold, desolate landscape when you got a bunch of people that you might not even like necessarily.
They're all drinking a lot.
They're all drinking, playing pool, playing ping pong. They're bored. It's like, what exactly are we researching out here in the scientific station?
They're fighting the robots, you know, like the
they're
chess
fighting
robot.
The chess wizard or whatever.
Your move, bishop to knight 4. My move, knight to rook 3.
Poor baby, you're starting to lose it, aren't you?
Your move, king to rook 1. My move, rook to knight 6. Checkmate. Checkmate.
Bitch.
That was something I remember. I forgot to like
the chess master.
Wilford Brimley is like talking to like ChatGPT in the movie. You remember that? Like he's like
that's crazy. Maybe that's what they were doing in Antarctica. They were building the first ChatGPT because I had that thought too. It's like it's telling him the probability. It's like yeah, they're probably someone you know.
Well, I guess
there's probably a thing.
I know. I guess like that's a thing with like computers is like the.
They could do anything like, at this time.
Yeah, I guess, and I guess that's what you were using it for—the probability of like things and stuff in the 70s, and this is the 80s, but like it was like 70s computers or something. But I guess they were high tech. These guys were like scientists in Antarctica. I don't. Did they ever say what they're doing out there?
No, that's the thing. I'm just like, I have no idea what they're doing. So at this point, I'm just assuming they're developing ChatGPT down there. Like that's what Wilford Brimley's doing.
Yeah, because he's like, it's like talking to him, like as if it's having a conversation or something. Just tell them the probability of it taking over the planet. And should we do the math of like it says 27,000 hours? How many like days is that?
Ask ChatGPT. I don't know.
It'd be 1,125 days. So like 3 years or something, maybe 4 years.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway, thought that was interesting.
It is interesting to think about how quickly it would spread because it's like this is a violent transition process when it things someone, you know. It's not like it just jumps on you and absorbs you immediately. It's like
it's so creepy. The things I always forget, yeah, like that one dude that like he discovers as a I wish I could remember all their names, but like I think it's Windows discovers
my God,
a guy like that's the thing that they took from the Antarctica site. What's the thing that they have covered up? They're putting in the shed or the storage.
So they fly. So to get into the movie, the movie opens with a great mysterious opening. If you're watching this for the first time, it's Antarctica, and there's a helicopter flying around, and there's a guy like outside the door with like a sniper rifle, and they're trying to shoot this dog. This
That's
husky.
Why I think it should start here without the UFO. That's what I'm saying. Shouldn't have the UFO shouldn't be in the beginning at all. You should just start with the dog, I think.
Well, and it's funny too. Apparently, when this was released, I think in Norway, they did not change the line that he was speaking. He was speaking Norwegian, and he was yelling, "That's not a dog. That's not a dog."
Wow.
But they don't subtitle it in this, so it's like you don't know what he's saying. But if you know what he's saying, you're like, oh, okay.
But well, ultimately,
it doesn't matter. You're like, okay, so clearly there's something fucked up with that dog. Why else would this guy be shooting at
it? Or the guy's, to me, it looks like just a guy going crazy, like shooting dogs, like or like hunting, like wolves or something. Antarctica.
You know, I almost wish that like this just opened with a space shot and it pans over, and maybe it pans over like Antarctica or something, and then you get the thing title card. You might be right. We don't need the alien, the wobbly
you don't
alien
need
space
the wobbly sauce. Alien spaceship. I'm saying it's a mistake. It's a mistake of the movie, I think.
I'm fine with this shot, this identical shot in Predator. Weirdly?
No, we talked about that too. I don't think it needs it in Predator either, right? I think we talked about like it'd be cooler if you just had a discovery of what the hell this is. Am I wrong?
I'll say this. I think it looks better in Predator.
Yeah, but that was like 6 years later, wasn't it, or something?
The ship looks better. It looks more alien-y and less traditional alien-y.
It just has like Christmas lights around it in this movie, you know?
Yes, I think that's the thing. It has the lights on it are too colorful. It's the wrong tone.
But anyway. I do like the idea that it's not the thing's spaceship, that he took the it's whatever alien it took over.
It took over. I think that's probably what happened. But anyway, so these Norwegians are shooting at this dog. They eventually follow it into the U.S. Antarctic research station. What they're researching and doing, who knows?
Just Antarctica, I guess.
Yeah, and
well,
and
I guess they talked about like there's always is there alien, like there's been like, you know, the ancient aliens idea and stuff, you know,
and maybe they're researching like bacteria down there, or I mean, they're always like unearthing, you know, new bacteria that's been frozen for thousands of years in Antarctica.
They do have like a lot of test tubes and like whatever those little blood,
they had
beakers and so stuff.
With science stuff, but they go in, they interrupt Kurt Russell's game with the chess master or chess wizard, which I had a funny thing. Like, I feel like this is something that everyone thinks of when watching this movie. It's like, so he plays this chess master game or chess wizard, excuse me, I keep flipping back and forth. He does a move, he thinks he's got it, and then it checkmates him, and then he just opens up a little flap and pours his whiskey or whatever it is into there, frying the circuits. And my immediate thought is, so I guess no more chess wizard for everyone else then.
It's probably not a cheap piece of equipment either, you know.
Well, that's what made me laugh. I'm like, I feel like you could take this, like, if this were like a Naked Gun style parody, he would do that and then open up like a closet door and there'd be 100 more chess wizards in there.
Yeah.
And he just quickly replaces it.
They could do
it's
that
like a warehouse full of chess wizards.
In like Scary Movie, was it 7 coming out or something like that? Or 6 or 7? They should do that in there.
Yeah, that'd be a good joke.
If people remember, you know.
Yeah. Anyway, his game gets interrupted because there's this crazy Norwegian flying around. And then they finally land. And what I love about this and again, it adds to the point that this guy is clearly crazy, whoever he is. You don't know why he's doing what he's doing. He pulls out this grenade, and then in an odd motion, he like throws it behind him. Like, like
I
he's
forgot
very hurried.
Because there's the pilot, too. And I think he like throws it on the pilot. I don't know.
He throws it near the he like, I don't know. He's just too hurried, and he like mistakenly throws it behind him, like by the helicopter, and it blows up.
Yeah,
it
slips out of his hand or something.
Slips
he's
out of his hand. Yeah. I mean, he's all flustered. He's trying to kill a thing, and then he just runs out.
He's got the Brimley disease, you know, the Wilford Brimley disease.
Which, you know, admittedly, like when Brimley is at that point later, when he's in the same stage of hysteria after he's talked to chat, or like, you know, prototype ChatGPT, and it's told him like, hey, this is going to take over the world in like a few years. He's like, I can't let this leave. Like, this is our best chance to stop this thing. So I feel like you would go crazy at this moment. You know what I mean? Like, I have to stop this thing. I don't care about anyone else, whoever I have to kill potentially to stop this. But it is crazy. He comes in, he starts shooting wildly. And then I forget his name, but the president from Clear and Present Danger, he takes out his gun and he shoots the guy in the head.
Yeah. Like from like one shot, like from the window. Like he breaks the window and like a cop and
takes him out, shoots him right in the head, right in the forehead.
Yeah.
And that seems to end it.
Well, there's a madman running in with a gun into your camp, you know?
He's justified.
Yeah, he's justified to killing him.
He's already winged one of your coworkers. It's like, yeah, it's totally justified. I'm not saying he was in the wrong here,
maybe none of one of them had to probably know a little Norwegian. But Norwegians all know English actually too, so you know.
Well, it's like maybe he could have tried to shoot for the leg, you know, so they could get some answers, but he went for a headshot anyway. I'm not saying he's in the wrong for killing that guy, but anyway.
Yeah.
So this leads to the mystery of like what the hell was going on with these Norwegians? Like what was going on? Like let's take a flight. What were they chasing this dog for? Let's take a helicopter flight over to the base and see what's going on. And to answer your earlier question, what they bring back is like the it's like the thing mid transformation,
like,
but the Norwegians burned it.
Yeah, okay.
It's like a mound of thing and human flesh. You get that cool shot of like, oh my God, there are so many great looking shots in this movie and realization shots. Like it's that for the first one we get is when they pull the when they bring the thing carcass back that was like burned like outside the Norwegian camp. They bring it back, they plop it down, they open it up and all this like steam comes off of it. And it's just this slow shot as it like pans across all of their faces and the realization they're having of like, is that like an alien, guys? Because that's like two faces like mid-merge. Like that's not right.
faces in there. There's some dog in there. There's a, I don't know, freaking bird. I don't know.
And I love Brimley's description of this as he's calmly opening it up. He's just like,
oh, God.
Well, oh, no, what am I thinking of? No, I'm thinking of something else. I was trying to think of a...
There's a point where he opens it up and it like pulls out like it looks like a big bulb or something.
Well, no, okay. There are two sequences where Wilford Brimley does he does an autopsy. I think that the first one is when he's looking at the thing mid-merge carcass, and he's calm at this point. He's like,
"Well, what we got here is what appears to be, anyway, a normal set of internal organs: heart, lungs, kidneys, liver, intestines." Seem to be normal.
Like, he's very calm about it. It's only in the next autopsy when I think they kill the thing. Like, they see a live thing, they kill it. When he's autopsying that thing, the dog thing, that's when he's finally like, oh, God, oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And again, it gets back to what you were saying, like, okay, people, 1982, I get it.
Yeah.
You're trying to eat popcorn watching this scene, forget about it.
Especially the first, because we're talking about, like, turning stuff up. I looked at it. The shot of the dog going, like, walking around and then going in, I forget who's, they don't really see who it is, but it's, like, a guy's
best supporting actor nomination for this dog.
Yeah.
First of all.
And so the moment, I think it's the first fade to black. There's a lot of interesting like fade to blacks in this movie.
Yeah.
And the first one is at 15 minutes exactly. And it's when that dog walks in the hallway, sees that dude it's sitting by himself in his
silhouette. Room. You don't know who it is.
Yeah. And then it walks in. And that's 15 minutes. And then since from that point on, it's like, fuck, like the dog shit and the kid, they put the dog that has the thing
in the kennel.
In a kennel with the other dogs, and it basically attacks all the other dogs, and that's the most that could be so upsetting, especially for a dog person.
There's some moments in this movie where it's like, even though it's a puppet dog, you're like, there's like tentacles wrapping around the dog's like neck, and you're like, oh no,
no, and it's fast. Imagine it like on like on film and theater and stuff. It's gonna look crazy. It's gonna look fucked up. It still does, you know.
It was still effective, like, and to speak to that dog, like the dog acting in this movie is so good because they could just. I mean, I'm sure they're just making signals and it's calling over, but this dog has a sense of performance because it takes beats.
I know, walking out, looking out the window at one point, just like, looking
oh my god, that scene when they leave, like, let's go see what happened, and you just see the dog like in its own separate room looking out the window. Almost like, you know what I mean? He almost reminds me of the Terminator looking out the window, just scanning the horizon. You know what I mean?
No, but he's like looking, and he's like, all right, they're leaving. I better get started, you know?
Exactly.
It's real. Yeah, it's the best.
And then that scene when he walks into the room and he takes his first person, he assimilates his first person, like how the way that the dog just slowly walks down that hallway. There's one moment when he like peeks into one room, stops, looks over, I'll go over to that room, goes over there just slowly. And like you said, like, and then when they put him in the kennel later, the guy recognizes that something's off with this dog. He puts the dog in the kennel and the dog just slowly walks into the center of the room and just sits there staring at the wall while all the other dogs just look at it. And he's just like, what the hell's the deal with that dog? And that's and the cuts here in this movie are so good with the effects.
Yeah,
because it's a normal dog. 1 second, it starts freaking out. And suddenly like the face like opens up like a flower or something, like a Venus flytrap. It's so fucked up. And it starts shooting this liquid at a real dog. We should say this. There's a moment when liquids get shot at clearly a real dog, and I feel bad.
Yeah, it's like a hose get sprayed at. Yeah.
But it's like goop.
Yeah.
It like sprays it with like Ghostbusters slime. And you're like, oh.
Yeah. So I think it being that's the first like kind of like gnarly stuff, I can imagine
it's the first
being
act.
I wish I could wipe my mind and see this and see what it'd be like. Unfortunately, recently in Bartertown, there was a screening of the thing, and they brought Kurt Russell's head in a jar there to like, you know.
I heard about that. Yeah.
And it was sold out. None of us could get tickets to go.
I thought you were a member.
Was that?
I thought you were a member.
Exactly. It was a whole mistake. It was the damn.
Oh, right.
They fucked it up. They fucked up the links and stuff. They had to apologize for it. Anyway, Bartertown.
Because that's like a once in a lifetime event.
Yeah, I mean, it was an expensive ticket, but it was for charity. You know, it was for Go Hoos charity, or, you know, or, but anyway.
They only unthaw Kurt Russell's head so many times a year.
Yeah, you know? I know.
It's
yeah.
a very rare occurrence.
I would have loved to hear the stories about it, but it was a 35mm print of the movie, and I'm sure it would have been crazy. And I bet there'd be people there that probably never seen the movie before. And just to hear what it would sound like would be crazy. I don't know if I've seen it in theaters. I'm trying to remember if I have or not. I don't think
I've been lucky enough.
But. Yeah. And so I'm just saying, like, if there's, I imagine that it's disgusting and sick and fucked up. If you were didn't have any context for this movie, like, if I didn't know that was going to happen, it'd probably really be, screw me up.
You know, it's funny. Speaking of nobody knowing what's going to happen, one of my favorite stories from my parents is them going to see this movie early on in their relationship on a date. They saw this movie at a drive-in.
Wow.
And so it's, you know, the summer of 1982. They're in a drive-in. They're in my dad's, like, old pickup truck. It's like one of those pickup trucks where there's no back seat. Yeah. It's just, like, the glass behind you, you know, the front seat or whatever. And I remember him telling me, like, it was the scene when they're doing the test.
Yeah.
The blood test.
It's
probably the greatest jump scare it might be the greatest jump scare in the movie and one of the greatest jump scares period in horror.
Yeah.
It's when he's, you know, there he's talking and then mid conversation he dips the thing in the tray, the petri dish.
For someone you don't think is gonna be the thing, you know.
You don't think it's gonna be the thing because the way he's talking and the way like the tone of the scene is, you're like, this is just gonna be another tss, you know, and nothing happens. But he touches it and this fucking thing erupts from this petri dish.
Get away from me.
And my dad said at that moment, my mom flung her head back so violently that she hit the back glass of the car, like that. But I get it. Like, those things are creepy. Like, the jump scares are effective. And I think the, you know, Christmas tree lights on the UFO aside, the effects in this movie hold up.
Oh,
there's a reason this is, like, hailed as one of the best practical effects movies.
Yeah. It's that whole scene at the petri dish. I remember it so vividly, everything except for where it goes. Like, I don't know, maybe it's like cropped on TV or something like that, but like, I don't remember what that guy, like him, like getting like his body, how it changes and stuff, like next to all the other folks and everything like that. Maybe on TV they like edited it out. I don't know. It just seems
crazy. It is pretty crazy violent because as he's doing it, you realize, oh, okay, the guy who's always high, I forget the names too, but the guy who's always high is wearing like the leather, or not the leather, the denim jacket or whatever with like the arm sleeves cut off.
He's the guy that
he
says,
starts freaking out like they're all tied to the chairs and the couch together and he starts freaking. It's such a good shot because like at one point he like flings itself up to the ceiling while they're still all tied to the couch and they're all just sitting there like, get me the fuck off this thing. What the fuck
Yeah, and then he eats the dude, the windows.
Well, this is something we gotta talk about. Windows. Okay, he's the guy on like the communications throughout the movie. I can't raise shit, man, there's nobody out there.
He's wearing sunglasses.
He's wearing sunglasses, he's got the afro. Dude, this is a hell of a time to freeze up, man, because he's got a working flamethrower. Kurt Russell's trying to use his, but it's like stalling out or something. He's like, window, shoot the damn thing. And as the thing flies back down to the ground, it kind of comes up. It stands over menacingly. It stands over windows. And he just sort of has this moment like, it's the moment any horror movie when like the creature or killer or whoever like appears in front of you. And instead of running or reacting, you just sort of look up the thing, like
slow motion, like boo. Well, I think,
and then it eats him and pulls him up, this is funny too because Windows suddenly becomes like a mannequin or a puppet or something, his like dangling legs.
Well, it looks crazy. The thing's like mouth opens up and just like swallows his head whole, basically, and it's like the tree in Poltergeist eating that
well
kid.
Like his body is like flinging around through the air.
It's pretty. It's screwed up.
And it's gnarly. It's fucked up. It's super bloody.
No, that like, that whole thing. I don't remember what that. I can never remember what that looks like. You know what I mean? Like that whole end.
Well, it's a gnarly image because again, there's no CGI here. It's all practical, and it's like this guy's head like opens up like a mouth, and then he grabs this guy, pulls him up by his feet, and then just proceeds to try to shove him down his mouth hole, like while he's holding him up in the air. It's insane. While his puppet legs are like flying everywhere.
Well, like it's kind of like, I mean, there's sort of a thing like that in the dog scene, where it almost doesn't it like jump up through the ceiling, kind of like. Alien.
It does this a few times in the movie where it'll like extend itself. It like grows and it like it
it's
bursts
like you see
through.
Its arms and legs or something. Kind of almost like here and it, but like the body of the other thing is still there and it kind of like separates from like the its host or whatever or its
and it tries to like burst through like the roof and or the ceiling and go to another level of the compound or whatever.
Yeah, it's all that always I always forget that. That's always like it like almost like sees its arms almost like open up. It's kind of that. See those images like that for some reason don't stick with me. I don't know. It's always a surprise every time I see the movie.
Well, those are always great. And again, like apologies to the people in 1992. I get why this would be horrifying, but because again, it's like you never really would have seen anything. The closest you would have got to this would have been a few years prior in Alien.
You don't see it, you know, as much. You know,
it's a very quick cut in Alien when it bursts out of his chest. So this is more prolonged.
It's like, what if we did Alien? Like, we were pussies about the Alien? That's kind of how it feels this movie, because it is very much like I could see someone too, like seeing this and being like, oh, it's maybe it's like a ripoff of Alien, but like in the Arctic, and then but it's grosser, and I could see someone not liking that either, you know, like.
Well, and the imitation scenes are disgusting. Like, there's a moment when, like, Wilford Brimley, who is now at this point later in the movie become a thing, he, like, grabs the guy by the face and, his fingers go into the guy's face.
Yeah.
Like, it becomes the guy's face. Like, it looks like putty. It's disgusting.
Yeah. What happens to the... Is he the chef? The other guy that's with the last four? Like, Russell and... Keith David and the guy,
we don't see what happens to him.
You don't see what happens to him.
He hears what's like, so the president from Clear and Present Danger is the one who gets like Wilford Brimley's like face or his like hand in his face. And then the cook guy, I forget his name, he hears this. He goes in there, but we don't see what happens to him. I think you're just to assume that he got thinged.
He got thinged.
Because Kurt Russell then, who's like setting up the dynamite at the end of the movie, is like, hey, so-and-so, you all good back there? And then he doesn't hear anything, and he realizes, oh, crap, he's been taken.
Knowles.
Knowles, yes, Knowles.
Yeah, he's the cook. Yeah, he's so crazy, so wild.
You know, one thing, like, some people were saying online, like, of the time, like, critics of the time, like, they praised the effects, but they thought it was too nihilistic, and they thought the characterizations were bad. I disagree. It's not like we get a ton of backstory, but I think the characterizations here, I think, are good. Like, you get a sense of, I think you get more of a sense of, like, they're all sort of in the same boat. Like, they're in this, like, desolate landscape. There's nothing to do besides drink and play, like, pool or pong.
Yeah, I guess you don't get a lot from everybody, but everyone's pretty distinct. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, I agree.
I can see there being a little bit more with everybody, but I guess it's just kind of painting you as, like, it's almost just like a bunch of guys. Like, I don't know. There's like, that's really about it, you know, but there's not really like, I don't think there's anybody that's like, no, nobody. Is there anybody that gets like really short shrift? You think? I don't know. Maybe
I don't
like,
think so.
Yeah. Everyone kind of has a thing, but they're not like, I don't think that they're like too stereotype either. I don't know.
No. No, I mean, there's the high guy. There's the guy who's always stoned. Keith David is the one who apparently has a short fuse. Like, at one point, Kurt Russell's like, I think we need someone a little more even-tempered. Thank you, Charles.
Yeah, he kind of hates him from the beginning. He's kind of like everyone kind of thinks he's an asshole from the start.
Well, and that's what I'm getting at. I feel like it's subtle. I feel like the characterization is subtle. And also, you got to figure, like, these people have been with each other in this, like, desolate, isolated place for a while now. They got on each other's nerves. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like it's, we're not getting a crazy amount of backstory. Like, for instance, we have no idea what the fuck they're doing here, but other than generically researching things. But I don't know. I didn't mind the character. I thought the characterization was fine.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't really look into the reviews. I just knew it. People didn't really like it, and it didn't do well. So,
yeah, I'm like, honestly, towards the end, when it's just Russell, the president from Clear Present Danger, and Knowles, the cook, like, when it's just, oh, and Childs is with them. Yeah. Keith David, we should mention he's there.
He disappears for a while, though.
He kind of disappears for a while. They go off and do this thing, and he kind of stays behind. Oh, they go to get Blair. That's what they go to go. They go to the shed to get Wilford Brimley.
And he's building another little UFO.
That's such a crazy reveal. Like, oh, it turns out he like buried under the shed and like is building his own UFO from parts scavenged from like the helicopter and stuff.
That's crazy.
That is a crazy thing that the movie doesn't linger on very long. It's like a one man sized UFO that he's building underground.
It just can't be a UFO. I don't know. Like, is that my nut? I guess I'm thinking like it would be like a Venom, like it'd be like a meteor or something that comes on. Mm. But I don't know. It's weird. it's something about the UFO still irks me a little bit.
Do you think in your mind is like for you personally, is the traditional UFO flying saucer just too cheesy?
I no, because I like a UFO. I think for some reason in this. The two things don't go together, like the alien in here and the UFO.
Well, I think the suggestion is, I feel like they say this, if not in this one, maybe it was the prequel of all things, but they say like once this thing assimilates someone or something, it essentially just absorbs all of its, not like they say, it becomes a perfect imitation. So therefore it would know how to operate, say, so that knowledge is passed down through all the things it's assimilated. Like for instance, knowing how to fly and build a flying saucer, I guess.
Dogs and such.
Or dogs, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It's the only thing that sticks in my crawl. It's always a weird like choice, but it is based off of old. You know, it's an old. You know, I never seen the original thing. I know it's based off.
It's not
of
good.
Book
I've stuff. Seen it. I watched it with Nick. It's not great.
Yeah, and I think just like it's going for a little bit of that. Like it's like almost an homage to this old 50s. You know. Sci-fi.
Well, and to go back to the characterization, like I like the moment when it's just the handful of them and they get to a point where I love this. And again, it makes me like it's sad about their missing camaraderie because there's like a moment when it's just like, all right, guys, we're not getting out of here. Like it cut the power. We're fucked. We're not getting out of here. But neither is that thing. And there's a moment when it cuts to the president from Clear Present Danger. I forget his name. Sorry. And he just sort of has a smile like. Fuck yeah, McCready, let's do this thing. Let's blow this fucker right up. You know what I mean? I love how quickly they all get on board with like, all right, we're all going to die, but so is that thing. You know what I mean? There's no scene, there's no drawn out thing where they're like, no, I want to live. We have a chance. I like how nihilistic it is where it's like, yeah, we're totally dead, but we're going to kill that thing too. We're going to take it with us. Like, I like how on board they are like right away with it. It's great.
Is it Gary?
Station that sounds commander? Right.
I'm looking at all the names.
He's another guy, kind of like Childs. He's another guy of the group that no one seems to like.
He kind of seems like he's a stuck-up kind of guy, holds the gun, you know?
Yeah, couldn't wait to get your gun off, huh, Gary?
Yeah. Yeah, he's station commander. I always think, like, it's because it seems like McCready's sort of the leader, but he's really just, this is the helicopter pilot of the
But he does see, like, everyone, it's like, well, what does McCready think? You know what I mean? Like, they all look to him.
But
to be fair, he has the most majestic hair and he has the coolest hat.
That hat is wild. What a choice that hat is.
That hat should be in the Smithsonian.
I mean, I think if you were on Antarctica, I'd want that hat too. But it's very Western, you know, purposefully probably to make that. Yeah. He's kind of cowboyish a little bit. He's sort of Han Solo in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, what if you went and saw this because you were a Kurt Russell fan from like the Disney era or something, and you're just like, oh my!
And you missed Escape from New York, so you haven't seen his more gritty recent stuff.
Oh, so Escape was before this? I forgot.
This was a year before. Yeah, that was a year before this.
Yeah, you like saw, I don't know, what's one of
the boy who
the boy
wore the computer
tennis
who wore tennis shoes.
The computer wore tennis shoes. And then you saw this, like, oh my god. I guess he was in Used Cars a couple of years before that. That's pretty.
Oh yeah, Robert Zemeckis.
That movie's pretty dirty, you know.
Can you imagine? I imagine an alternate reality, like if somehow Walt Disney, on his deathbed, sees the thing, and suddenly he's like, you know what? I was wrong. Kurt Russell is not the next Wonder Star, the next star. Because supposedly that was like Disney's last words. Like, Kurt Russell, he is the one. Well, you never heard of this story?
I don't think so, no.
Supposedly his last words were like, Kurt Russell's going to be like the next big star. Like that was like his last, the last thing he said. Look it up. It's real.
All right.
But I imagine if old Walt had seen or gotten wind that he would eventually star in a movie like The Thing, if he would be like, you know what? Never mind.
This is crazy. Okay. It sounds like he wrote on a piece of paper, just Kurt Russell.
Kurt Russell.
That's so weird. Yeah.
He is the chosen one. John Carpenter promised me you will train him.
Disney's most enduring mysteries. The last thing Walt Disney wrote before his death in 1966 was Kurt Russell on a piece of paper. What the hell is that supposed to
be? Maybe he meant to write Fire Kurt Russell. I don't know.
I guess because he'd only been like, I mean, if you look at his filmography, it's basically all Disney movies until 1975. His first, like, The Computer Who Wore Tennis Shoes was in 69. So that was...
So after Walt's death.
So they were like, we got to do it then. We got to
keep this kid on, Walt. Keep this kid going. Just, like, wrote down mysteriously on a piece of paper, just ominously, Kurt Russell.
And he's in a bunch of these live-action movies, that like tons of them. Like, in The Strongest Man in the World was in 75, which I think is a Disney movie. Yeah, that was his last Disney movie. And then he has a 5-year break until Used Cars. And I think in that time is when he was like playing baseball in Portland and all these things. Like, he was just like, that 5-year gap is sort of like, I need to get out of this Disney world.
Okay. Well, I wonder if enough time would have passed if people would have forgotten him as the Disney kid.
Yeah, I mean,
in that period.
That 5-year period from 75 to 80.
Because at that time, there's no VHS. There's no home video. No. So enough
time may have
passed.
He was in 10 Disney movies and then a 5-year gap. So.
Well, and also, when he comes back with Used Cars, and then he plays Elvis, I think, in 79 for John, also for John Carpenter, and then Escape from New York, and then this, like, yeah, he's essentially just a whole different person. He has assimilated into a different actor at that point.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's through the 80s, tons of good stuff and everything.
Oh, yeah.
So, and then I never saw Swing Shift, but that's the Jonathan Demme movie that got, like, recut and stuff. Oh, but I'm pretty sure that's when he, like, started hanging out with Goldie Hawn and stuff like that. So, pretty cool. Mm. Anyway, yeah, pretty good, interesting career he has and stuff. But he's never, what is his, I guess he's, like, a household name, but he's never really been, like, he's not like a Tom Cruise ever or anything like that, you know? Like, he's almost like a B star in a weird way. Almost like if Bruce Campbell was bigger in a weird way.
I could see that. Well, because he has like that fun energy about him, you know what I mean? Like, he doesn't, like, he could be serious, but I feel like under it all, like, he has kind of a fun, like, you know, Han Solo-esque kind of thing about him.
Yeah. Interesting career.
I'm trying to think of, like, the really big movies he was in. I mean, obviously, there was the ones in the 80s, but, like, if we're talking, like, mega blockbusters, there was, like, Stargate. He was kind of, like, one of the big stars
like
of that, I suppose.
Tombstone and stuff, I guess.
You know what? I think it's Tombstone. It might be Tombstone is the biggest one.
And then it's, like, there's a couple. I'm trying to think, like, when he's, like, the star, though. There's, like, and this
like Poseidon.
Is like,
yeah. But like, that movie kind of bombed, if I remember correctly.
Like, Breakdown, Soldier, Backdraft.
Oh, Backdraft.
I guess
okay,
Tango
that would have
and
been
Cash more. Stuff too, but I never. Is Tango and Cash any good?
No. I mean, it's a fun movie to watch because it's so bad, but no.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't. He never necessarily reached the same heights as someone like a Tom Cruise. Like, he wasn't like in giant. I mean, he was in franchises, but they were like, you know.
Well, they're
like
all
Escape
movies
from New
that
York
have gotten like popular over time, you know?
Over time, yeah.
That's crazy. I mean, they were, I guess, they've always kind of been popular. I guess. They were kind of almost became hits or popular like right after, like a year later almost, because of like TV and stuff.
Yeah. Like The Thing, for instance, like, it doesn't seem like it took very long for this to become a cult classic and eventually, like, you know, hailed as a masterpiece.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because this came out in 82. So this is right at the dawn of VHS and home video. So I feel like this must have been like a staple in video stores.
Yeah. And I bet it played on TV too. And like HBO probably early days and stuff like that.
It is a bummer though. This is, as Doc Brown would say, a red letter date in John Carpenter's career. Because in John Carpenter's mind, he has said this, like, the Thing is the best movie I made.
Yeah.
Period. But it was such like it, you know, the fact that it bombed, and this was a big budget movie at the time. This was by far his biggest budget movie. Like this, because at this point he's had Halloween, he's had Escape from New York, like all small budget but like large on return movies. He is a household name at this point. Like this is the time when they have that famous interview, that famous Mick Garris like interview. It looks like the '70s when it's him, it's John Landis, it's David Cronenberg. Yeah. Was there someone else there?
Cronenberg, Landis, and him, I think, right?
Was it just the three of them? And Mick Garris is
maybe
like interviewing
maybe?
Them.
I don't know.
Maybe it was Toby Hooper. Yeah, it would have been around this time. It would have been Poltergeist. Maybe Toby Hooper was there. But it's like a famous interview with these four guys, and they're all talking about the... Because they all have big horror movies, or they all have a big movie like coming out soon.
Yeah.
And this is like... Arguably, this like might be like the peak of their careers.
And Halloween,
or, like,
at the point, is like the biggest... independent movie probably ever, right?
At this point, yeah, when they're doing this interview, John Carpenter has The Thing coming out. David Cronenberg has Scanners, which has, you know, obviously one of the most famous horror images of a guy's head exploding. You got John Landis is talking about like American Werewolf in London, which recently came out. And then David Cronenberg, or I already said Cronenberg, I guess Hooper would be Poltergeist.
Okay.
Anyway, but it's a famous interview, and like it's such a bummer because I gotta imagine at this time Carpenter is thinking, like, before this is coming out, this is my biggest movie. Me personally, I think it's a masterpiece. It's my best movie yet. This will be the one they remember me for. And then it comes out and it just, like, people just reject it,
yeah,
like, utterly. It's got to be heartbreaking. And I don't think he ever fully recovered from that.
I don't think he makes a movie bigger than this. I don't really.
Well, I don't know if it's that he, it's not so much that he makes a movie bigger than this. I just don't think he ever, I think this left, the failure of The Thing initially left him so bitter. Because, like, you know what I mean? Like, this is just a huge moment in his career. Because right after this, a year later, he's just like, he kind of becomes a director for hire for a moment. It's like, yeah, I guess I'll do Christine. You know what I mean? The Stephen King thing. Like, that book just came out. It's like, I guess I'll do Christine. And that's kind of a hit.
Which is pretty good.
No, it is a good movie. Yeah, it's a Christine is a good movie.
But it does feel a little bit below him at that point. A little bit.
Well, it was kind of a director for hire bit. And then he does Starman, and that's kind of a hit. But nothing on the same level as, like, Halloween.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
They're both like, good, those movies too, but you're right. It's almost like, especially, they do feel like let's say Halloween was just like a mild hit, you know? Like it was like, mm-hmm, people liked it, but those feel like movies he would have done. You know what I mean? Like it became like a journeyman director making stuff like that. Instead, like, Halloween was so big that it was like he got the blank check right away, you know, and could do whatever he wanted kind of thing.
And he does Escape from New York, which is, low budget movie, but a big hit. I mean, not on the, when I say big hit, I don't mean on the level of like Star Wars or anything like that, but relative to the budget, a big hit.
Yeah. And for a genre.
And well reviewed. And a genre movie. Like, yeah, that's kind of his thing. He does like genre movies, but they're not hits on the same level as like Lucas and Spielberg, what they're doing at the time.
Do you think that, like, and then Big Trouble in Little China feels like kind of,
that's the second big flop that I think really is like, fuck
it's
Hollywood,
over, yeah,
you know,
it's over.
It's over.
Yeah.
And he does smaller movies from then on. Like, at one point, I think after Big Trouble in Little China, because that was a big budget movie as well, that was a movie I think was a failure of marketing. It's like, how do we market this movie? You know what I mean? It's like, our hero is like kind of this buffoon. It's like, I think if I remember correctly, like, the pitch of that movie was kind of like, what if the hero of the movie thought he was the hero of the movie, but in reality he was actually like the sidekick.
Which is fun. Yeah.
Which is fun. And that movie is fun as hell. But
I guess it is sort of like acting as if you know who this guy is almost already. You know, like, it's, I mean, maybe, yeah, I don't know.
To be fair, it must have been a pain in the ass to market that movie, Big Trouble in Little China. But it was a good, again, like The Thing, another movie that becomes like a cult hit not long thereafter. You know, video is big for John Carpenter. But it's just a shame. Like, he has like this thing. He gets this deal with, I forget the name of the movie studio or the company or whatever. But he's like, we're going to give you like low budgets, but you can do whatever you want and you can make three movies. And this is his era where he's like Prince of Darkness, They Live, And what was the other one? Was it Mouth in the Mouth of Madness? I can't remember. But they give him like three bit later, small.
Because before that's Memoirs of an Invisible Man.
Oh, yes.
Which is. Memoirs of... I remember when, because that would probably be like the first movie I remember seeing the trailers for before it came out. And I liked the idea of an Invisible Man movie, you know, mm-hmm. kind of thing. I'm like, oh, Chevy Chase, Invisible Man movie.
I mean, the only positive I can say for that movie is that some of the effects are kind of interesting.
I watched it and it's boring and shitty. It's like a shitty movie.
It's not a good movie. And apparently Chevy Chase was like one of the, I mean, a lot of people know this, but he was one of the worst actors to deal with. John Carpenter hated him. The only positive thing I can say about that movie, and apparently John Carpenter too, is like, Sam Neill was fun. Yeah. Sam Neill was a joy to work with, and he would work with Sam Neill a few years later.
He's in Memoirs? I forgot. He is, huh?
He's the agent guy.
Okay.
That's chasing Chevy Chase. But yeah, it's just such a bummer. Like it's kind of the thing, and then a few years later, Big Trouble in China, John Carpenter has these two big movies, big budget movies that he thinks like that he's really proud of, that he thinks are gonna hit, and they just don't, and it just kinda sours him, you know what I mean, for like the rest of his career. Like, when you see him talk in interviews after this, it's like, fuck Hollywood.
You know what? Starman wasn't a big hit either, really, it looks like. It kind of broke
Well, it even. Was like it was a hit in the sense that a lot of his movie, his small-budget movies were hits.
Well,
it
cost about the same, $24 million as Starman. I was like, that can't be a low budget.
Maybe the difference with Starman was that was kind of critically acclaimed, and it got some Oscar buzz.
I guess it showed that John Carpenter was best actor in that movie, so...
Yeah, so it kind of showed that John Carpenter could be like, hey, I could do whimsy too.
That movie's weird though too. It's kind of weird, you know.
It's trying to do an E.T. thing. It's clear like Columbia wanted their own E.T.
But it's pretty good.
I like Starman. Yeah, yeah. I think Starman's a good movie, and I think that Oscar nod for Jeff Bridges is deserved.
Also, I feel like you don't get enough Karen Allen, and she's great.
She's great in that movie too. There's a really good scene where she's like talking to him about like, what is death? You know what I mean? She's like, oh, well, how do I explain this? But anyway, getting back to the thing, like, yeah, it's just a bummer that I'm trying to think of like the alternate reality that would have occurred if the thing was a success on the same level as Halloween.
Yeah, yeah, I don't know. That's
how would it have changed his career? You know, would he have gone on to be a new? Would he go on to the leagues of like Spielberg and Lucas at this time if this had been such a big hit?
Do you think like maybe I'm thinking of like I'm trying to think of someone close, and I'm thinking of like maybe like M. Night Shyamalan maybe a little bit, but Shyamalan
maybe he goes on and has like a colossal failure. Yeah, like, I mean, a few years
the thing
later.
Is like Shyamalan had like 3-4 hits in a row, and it was like this guy's he's the next Spielberg.
Yeah,
and then it just was
well
like,
they were saying he was the new Hitchcock at the time.
Yeah, it was both. I think it was like and which is bad. They shouldn't have done that. I think they screwed him up a little bit, and then he went 15 years of just in the wilderness of like the worst movies of all time. And then I like now Shyamalan's new movies. Even they're kind of like it's very he feels like he's in Carpenter zone in a weird way. He's doing
like,
whatever
I have a small budget, but it means I can do whatever I want.
And they're really weird movies, is his own language of movies, and like and they're low budget and they make a ton of money. So I think and he's paying for it himself. That's the only thing that's going on.
So it's like in a weird way. I'm sure John Carpenter wouldn't say this, but it's almost just like, I kind of like that he kind of stayed in that zone, like low budget genre movies, but it allowed him to do kind of whatever he wanted to do with those movies.
Yeah, but I guess that like these do feel like very much him, you know, like those
and that's the thing. Yeah,
these other movies are a little bit all over the place, I feel like, you know, different tones and stuff. Some of them have.
Well, I don't know. It depends on what you're looking for. Yeah. Some of them, like obviously Memoirs of an Invisible Man, that's director for hire. But like some of his other movies, I mean, They Live is totally John Carpenter.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Prince of Darkness is an underrated movie. In the Mouth of Madness is good. And then, of course, Big Trouble in Little China. So he had good movies after this.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's interesting. This is probably, it's definitely his best movie, I think. You know, and it's like, it's tough that it didn't do it. And I think the thing is like people could tell him all he wants now, like, oh, it's amazing and we love it and it's probably made some good money now, but like nothing's gonna hit like that first time around, you know, because he knows the career he had and like that world works on you have to have hits to keep going, you know.
And I think he's just beyond that now. He's just like, I'm tired of that shit. I don't want to play that game anymore. Like, I want to play video games.
Yeah, when you're young and you know dumb and full of, you know, what's a funny word? So I don't say cum. I don't know. But when you're full of it, it like it just like how old is he probably when he's doing this movie?
I think he's in like his 30s.
Yeah, so he's 48. He's born in 48. So it'd be, you know.
So yeah, he's in his 30s.
Yeah. And so like he's ready to go, you know, and like and getting and not working probably really does shut you down. So
well, once he gets to a point like because yeah, like early 2000s, like that's when he craters with Ghosts of Mars. It's like this is trash,
yeah.
And he's done at that point. And Escape from LA has already failed at this point. That was kind of like his resurgence or what could have been. Like that was a big budget. Oh, this is gonna be great. But I think he still had that low budget mentality because Escape from LA, it feels like a low budget movie.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't, there's probably people that like vampires. I didn't think vampires was very good.
I don't particularly care for vampires either.
But like, yeah, Village of the Damned is kind of shitty, I think, too. I don't know.
Not great.
It's okay, yeah. Though. It wasn't like.
The 90s weren't great for Carpenter. Like, I think In the Mouth of Madness was kind of like one of the lone shining spots of the 90s for him.
His last good, probably. Yeah.
I think so. Yeah. That one, now I think that was like 94.
Yeah.
So
it's tough. I mean, anyway. The thing is, his run, though, is one of the best ever.
It's one of the most legendary runs. Yeah. The 80s were Pete Carpenter.
Like, say, if you start with Assault, I mean, Dark Star's tough watch, but Assault on Precinct 13. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. It's basically from Assault on Precinct 13 to They Live is 10 movies that I think are from good to great, you know?
Yeah.
And then you have one little speed bump with Memoirs of Invisible Man. Like maybe a speed bump, like a fucking ditch, and then In the Mouth of Madness. If it didn't have Memoirs, you'd have 11 movies in a row that are all like really good,
good to great. Yeah, yeah. I agree.
It's crazy.
It's a bummer. So it's like, you know, with Carpenter, I would think he's in a good place now. He's like he doesn't make movies anymore. He just makes music with his son because he loves making music. He's making soundtracks to movies that don't exist, kind of.
Well, yeah, and I think doing the and being able to like do a tour for or even like a few dates every once in a while, it's going to be a good chunk of money, you know.
And his albums sell well, from what I understand.
And hopefully he's getting good because his movies now all do well and have crazy releases on Blu-rays and are probably going to get more sets made every 5 years, probably
more reboots and remakes. So that's more change.
Yeah,
and
so he's made it work, you know. He's like, yeah, I don't need to fucking make movies, you know. Like to come back and make a movie that sucks is the worst, you know.
That's bad. Yeah.
I mean, I didn't see The Ward. That's his last movie. Did you see that?
No, I have not heard great things about it. I from what I understand, it's like, well, it's better than Ghosts of Mars. It's got that going for it, but that's not saying much.
God, Copper's.
No, it seems like he's in a good spot, and just, you know, more power to him. Just retired, played video games, and occasionally tour with my son and be a rock star. I mean, what more could you ask for?
Yeah. I mean, he was doing the music from the beginning anyway, so.
Yeah.
And now he can go to, you know, cons and stuff and talk, and they probably get a good chunk of money for that. I feel like every once in a while there's like him, you know, bullshitting on a panel or something like that.
Yeah. So it's like he had a rough go of it for a long time, but I think eventually from an outsider's perspective, it seems like he's got a good life. So more power to you, Carpenter.
I mean, didn't he do the music for those
He did the music
movies?
For the Halloween remakes, the Lega sequels, the David Gordon Green Lega sequels.
What do you think of those? I mean, well, I guess the music. Suppose
those. The music. Yeah, the music's great. I mean,
it's recreating a lot of stuff, but I guess they're doing extra stuff too, you know.
Yeah. But it's vibes.
It's vibes. Yeah, those movies though, I don't care for, I would say.
And that's all good. That's all good. Well, any closing thoughts on we should say The Thing has one of my favorite endings to a movie ever.
Yeah.
Just nihilistic as fuck. McCready blows up the place. He kind of wanders out into the wreckage. He kind of flops down. He's got some booze with him. He's drinking. And then he kind of looks over. He does that horror movie thing where like, he turns around and suddenly Keith David is there with the flamethrower. He's like, where were you, Childs? And Childs gives some sort of lame thing like, I thought I saw someone out there. I went to go check on him or whatever. It's like, and at that point, McCready's like, I don't care if you're a thing or not. Like, what am I going to do about it? Like, the place is blown up. Like, you could be a thing. I could be a thing. We could both be humans. Who the fuck knows?
Yeah, he said, what's the line? He says, we might as well just Maybe we like.
I don't think we're in much shape to do anything about it. If you got any surprises for me.
I think he says, like, how are we going to get out of here or something like that? He's like, well, maybe we don't. Is that what he says? Is that the last line of the movie?
If we've got any surprises for each other, I don't think we're in much shape to do anything about it.
Well, what do?
Why don't we just wait here for a little while? See what happens.
It's pretty good. I know that.
And then you just get that last shot of the camp on fire as it sort of slowly fades to black. It's so good.
I know. Imagine if you. Yeah, I think you would probably be pissed off if you saw this in 82.
I mean, especially right after seeing E.T., where it's like, we literally get a rainbow as the ship flies off and everyone's happy. This is like everything's blown up and everything sucks.
I'm trying to. Okay, so we just saw Rocky III. We just saw Wrath of Khan, you know?
Yeah.
So you're right. E.T.,
You got a bunch of movies ending on super high notes, and then this is like the lowest of the low.
Why did they put it out in the summer?
Yeah, this is they didn't know yet. This is the type of movie you release in the fall.
Well, I guess you're right that they didn't know. This is the start. I mean, this is why we're doing this, is that this is the start almost. I mean, it's been a couple summers, a big summers, but this is now I think the start of like we're putting these big movies all out in the summer. Like
every weekend. Yeah, every weekend in the summer.
And I think like it wasn't like that, but it was a fluke that Star Wars came out in the summer and it was a big hit.
Yeah.
It was a fluke that Jaws came out in the summer and it was a big hit.
Well, I think Star Wars was originally supposed to come out like a Christmas release, right?
I think. And so, and so it's like one of these things, like these are, that was an accident that those were in the summer, you know? And now it's just like, because probably the summer was probably full of fucking Russell Crowe Disney movies and like,
Russell?
What did I say? Russell Crowe? Yeah, Kurt Russell. Yeah. Kurt Russell Disney movies and like Haley Mills Disney movies. Like where you dropped your kids off to watch, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
The I keep bringing it up because it just stuck in my head that nun movie where she becomes a nun and it pissed me off. The Only Angels Have Wings or whatever the hell. And I'm like, this is just like the 60s were just trash movies, really, until the end of them, you know? And then they really are like, you know, Tarantino, when he's bitching about this and stuff, he was on to something, you know, they really were tough. And so this is a whole new game. And so they're like, this movie's cost $30 million, whatever. Let's put it in the summer. Make 100.
Mm.
It was bad. So, but yeah, I don't know. It hits. It's very much, it's one I want to see in theaters really bad.
Yeah.
And I want to see it with people that don't know what it's like.
Yeah. But you want to get those reactions of people seeing this shit for the first time.
Because now I only watch it by myself, like in the middle of the night. It's the only time I watch this movie. And it's like a certain.
Boom, boom.
And so I just have. Boom, I want to experience it a different way somehow.
Boom, boom.
I think, and everything. But it's great. It's a number one, probably the top three horror movies, probably.
Definitely. It's a masterpiece. 5 stars. No doubt about it.
Other than that, like I said,
other than the Christmas tree lights on the UFO.
That doesn't affect the stars for me. I'm just saying, like, if I had the thing, I think it doesn't need that UFO. Or if it looked different, it just could be anything. Just, I don't know.
If it just flashed by the camera fast enough where you couldn't barely make it out.
Like maybe. A light going, like, vroom, yeah. Like, okay. Yeah, like that, a meteor, but maybe it's a little different. And then maybe they have the UFO in the Wolf of Brimley thing, which reminds me of like Back to the Future or something, you know.
Mm.
But there's something about that is only a little irk. But
well, if we're talking about the experience watching this, we did watch this in 4K, and I gotta say, like the whites really popped the snow. Like this is a beautiful looking movie. They did a great job restoring it.
Did you see the Mary Elizabeth Winstead movie?
Yeah, the prequel.
What's the deal
it's
with that?
Not. I don't know why. It's such a worthless movie because it's like, yeah, it's a prequel and it explains all the things that led up to, you see all the stuff that happened in the Norwegian camp. But here's the problem. we see all that. It's not a mystery of what happened, really. No. It's like we see the you know, we see the guy that like cut him, like cut his throat, like at the radio station. We basically know what happened.
The wall blown out behind him and stuff.
The wall blown. Yeah, it's like we get all that. So it's not telling us anything that we didn't already know. There's no new revelations really with that movie.
Are they supposed to be? Is she speaking Norwegian in the movie? Is it, what's going on? Like, is she?
If I recall, she has like a, maybe a boyfriend or someone or some acquaintance that brings her in. I feel like she maybe was an expert in fossils or something. They want to bring her in to look at this thing. No pun intended. Yeah, I don't really recall, but it's a worthless movie. And to put salt in the wound, like initially. So the thing, I feel like one of the big things the Thing is known for is the practical effects. You know what I mean? It's known for practical effects. So when they were making this prequel, you got the guy, I forget their names. I think it's like Alex Gillis and someone else. I can't remember. Their names escape me. But basically, they're like the main makeup guys. They worked on like the Alien movies. They come on board with this prequel and they're like, we're going to go practical too. But only now we got like advanced animatronics. It's like 2011 or whatever it is. And it's going to look great. And you see this test footage of stuff of like guys' heads like splitting open and it looks amazing. For whatever reason, though, the studio stepped in and they're like, no, you got to do that with CGI. And it looks like shit. And it's so disappointing. Like the one thing the movie may have had going for it, it just gets ripped out and suddenly it's just replaced with just lifeless CGI. And it's just a bummer. And to compound that, again, the movie itself is just it's useless. There's no reason for that prequel to exist. And it's not even like it's overly bad. It's literally just the Thing again. It has the same beats, only, you know, it ends with the dog escaping and the guy chasing it, and it leads into the next movie. But for all intents and purposes, it's almost the exact same movie.
It's, yeah, it looks like I'm reading, so the director of this, Matt, it's a Dutch name, Mathis van Helingen Jr. He hasn't really had any other credits before this, other than like a short, but he was famous for the commercial director. He did like a Toyota, Pepsi, and Bud Light commercials and stuff. And then I don't know how he got this job, but apparently it says that after this was in development hell, it got Zack Snyder directed the movie. That's what it says on this thing.
The prequel?
It says, never mind. Actually, this is talking about Army of the Dead. He was going to direct that.
Totally
and,
different.
And then Zack Snyder directed it instead. So, and sorry, I misread this. So. Yeah, I don't know. Weird. Yeah, I don't know. That's strange that, I mean, in a theory, you'd be like, okay, let's see what happened there. But nothing else happened that different. And it's, why don't they just call it the Thing? I don't know.
Yeah.
Weird.
Well, I'm not watching. You get everything you need to know. It's like, okay, these Norwegians unearthed this spacecraft. They thawed the Thing. It got loose. It killed them all. Like, what more do you need to know? And that's literally all we see in the movie. It's like, yeah, I already knew all that.
Yeah, it happens in the original movie. The exact same thing, you know.
The exact same thing happens, but we can ascertain what happened. They deduce it in the movie. There's no reason to go over those events.
One thing we haven't talked about really is the poster, the Drew Struzan poster, RIP.
Oh, that poster! Like, again, I got to imagine that sold a lot of video rentals.
Well, I imagine alone. That like they Carpenter too is like, I got this fucking poster. It's going to, who's not going to want to see that movie?
It's a great tagline. Man is the warmest place to hide.
Yeah. It's crazy. Yeah. So I just imagine just like everything is coming up Milhouse, this movie. And
again, I picture him in that interview. Like he's like, these chumps, they think they got a great movie on their hands. I'm the one with the masterpiece here. I'm going to be the next Spielberg.
Because that poster is it could sell anything. That poster, I don't know how.
That poster is amazing. It's so iconic. It's
they make figures of the poster now. Like there's like you can buy it's crazy. Yeah,
it's crazy how much there's video games. Like there's remakes of video games that came out 20 years ago based on the Thing. It's nuts.
Weird. It's nuts that they made a NECA made a. You can buy it for $40. It's a figure of the poster, and it's like a guy in a snow jumpsuit with the beams coming out of it, which is not even something that happens in the movie, but it somehow works. It's so cool.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, again, like, ultimately, time has been kind to the Thing. This is, you know, I think it's pretty much universally regarded as a masterpiece, not just of the genre, certainly the genre, but I think just a movie in general. And it also, this is another one of those movies. I think recently it got inducted into the National Film Registry.
Oh, cool.
Not long ago, so, yeah.
Well, I mean, the way things are going, they're going to put, like, I don't know, like, Sound of Freedom in the film registry. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's going to be, like, I don't know, what's, like, a movie that, like...
Passion of the Christ 2.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure Passion of the Christ might already be, yeah. Passion of the Christ 2, when he's going to, like, fight the devil, probably, and stuff. Do we have to? If that movie does stuff like that, we probably
are we gonna have to watch that movie for the show?
Maybe we'll have to wait till it's we have to pay to get into the box office for it, kind of thing. But maybe like if we could somehow get a copy of it,
a free copy, yes, so we don't have to at least pay for it. All right,
if only if he's doing stuff like fighting, like from what I hear, it's gonna be like a crazy
movie. And from what I understand, Caviezel is not back. Oh, he's Jesus. Not. He's not.
Oh, I thought he was back for sure.
I think he was for a period, but now he's not.
He probably asked for too much money or something, which he probably should get because that movie's probably going to make $1 billion.
We'll see. Anyway, no justice. If the passion, the resurrection of the Christ makes $1 billion and the Thing tanks, there's no justice in this world.
I mean, I was right about old Michael, you know, making a bunch of money.
Well, anyway, yeah, recommendations with the Thing. I mean, what else is there to say? It's a classic for a reason. It holds up.
Yeah, it's super good. It's fun to rewatch. I remember there was something there. They keep bringing it up because, you know, Colbert, RIP, kept talking about with that this movie is a comfort movie for him.
It's his favorite movie,
and he would he had both Keith David or and Carpenter. I think it's Keith David, and then also keep saying Russell Crowe.
Kurt Russell.
asking if Childs is the Thing at the end of the movie. And that Carpenter knows, but none of the other guys know. They're like, I don't know. Like they weren't told who was who, unless they do. What do you think?
I think at that point to address that, I don't think it matters at that point. You know what I mean? They could both be Things for all we know.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, the point is, it doesn't matter. It's just like, well, I guess if one of us is a Thing, we're just gonna. It plays into the whole paranoia of it all.
Yeah. It doesn't matter. Get the old like Harrison Ford answer. Who gives a shit? Whatever.
Who gives a shit? Yeah. It was a great ending. What do you want from me?
Who fucking cares? Yeah.
Well, when we return, where were you in '82? We will be discussing. We were talking about low budget movies, so we're going from the highs of Poltergeist and The Thing to the lows of Megaforce.
I don't even know what the hell this is.
This is directed by Hal Needham, who was popular. He was a stunt guy. He did Smoking the Bandit, The Cannonball Run. He was big with Burt Reynolds, big stuntman guy. But this is kind of a low budget. Oh, no, I take that back. This had a budget of $20 million. Wow. What the hell? This is one of those movies where you watch a trailer and you're like, so that's like a low budget, like, you know, is this like an Italian movie or something of the time? That's what I assumed this was. It's not. This is a big budget movie by a guy.
Oh, God.
This was released by Fox.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. I don't know this one. All right. Here we go.
Starring Barry Boswick and Michael Beck. Great. Oh, Michael Beck, our guy from Xanadu.
Xanadu.
Well, now I'm interested. I'm back in. All right. Well,
the poster looks like I don't know, kids movie. There's a lot of beams coming off. There's like dune buggies and motorcycles. Like, looks pretty good. There's never been a superhero like Ace Hunter. Megaforce.
Deeds, not words.
there's a lady in a dress in the front. You know?
I'm getting a sense that they want this to sort of be like a Mad Max-y, Star Wars-y vibe.
It does look like a mixture of the Mad Max and Star Wars.
Yeah. Well.
Okay, well, cool.
All right.
Sounds good.
Here we go. When we return, we'll be, I don't know, how do you even say this? Megaforce. We'll be back with Megaforce, folks. Deeds, not words.
Catch you later.
Thank you. I know you gentlemen have been through a lot. And when you find the time, I'd rather not spend the rest of this winter tied to this fucking couch!